Turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9. Good to be back. Colin Hyde had a great week last week preaching in Corinth, Mississippi. And wonderful week. Got to meet a lot of wonderful brethren. You might not be aware of this, but Huey and Betty Hartzell lived there for a long time. I've got a lot of dirt on Betty now. So when you get ready, you just let me know that the church there still loves them. Thanks so much to that family. It was really good to get to meet them. Luke chapter 9 is where we're going to begin. You may have heard the statement that the penalty of true greatness is a sense of loneliness. Think about how deep that could go. Penalty of true greatness is a sense of loneliness. Few can maybe think like them. Few can maybe share their visions. Sometimes might even be social outcast. And there was a sense toward that could be said of Jesus. People didn't understand him. We studied this morning, people didn't think like him. They didn't understand like him. And what I want to look at today, it's the loneliness of Christ. And that's something I've never really given a whole lot of thought to. We've all felt loneliness before. That's not an uncommon thought. We complain about being alone. We tend to react to loneliness in terms of pity, don't we? Could you imagine driving by a schoolyard and you imagine 30 kids out on recess and now there's one little kid, maybe with a ball over in the corner all by himself. I'm sure there are people here whose heart would break over something like that. Or leave the child and go to the other end of the stream. Imagine a widow or a widower living alone and somebody calls them and they say, I haven't seen a soul all day. So we understand loneliness. We've all experienced to some sort. And again, it might be that we react to it with sadness. I want you to read Luke chapter 9. Read verse 58. Jesus said to him, he's talking to a man who's talking about discipleship. I'll follow you. But let me go do this first. Jesus said to him, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Now, do you really read that with sadness? Do you read that and think to yourself, oh, that is just heartbreaking? Jesus was not saying that statement out of shame or out of sadness or out of regret. He was making that statement to let the man he was talking to know, count the cost. You say you're going to follow me, but you need to understand, following me might mean you have to give something up. This room's full of people who had to give things up. Still in the process of giving things up. We probably don't read this with pity. Nor should we, is the point. And so what a thing we might do is, we may, you know, Jesus had some bouts of loneliness. There were times he was alone. I feel some loneliness, and maybe we feel some self-pity. And well, that just makes me Christ-like. Jesus was lonely sometimes. I get lonely sometimes. It's just a part of my Christ-likeness. Well, let's be careful about that. If we're going to claim that we are Christ-like, and our loneliness is a character trait, maybe of some of that Christ-likeness, well, let's make sure we're lonely for the same reasons he was. Because when we read through, we can find out some reasons why that he might have been alone at certain times. And let's see if that's really what we're talking about. What are the things that led to Jesus' loneliness? Turn to Matthew chapter 14. Look at Matthew 14. This is, actually, we were just studying this in the high school class during the Bible period. We're in the third year of Jesus' ministry. We're studying the life of Christ. And we're up to that third year. We saw this morning, we saw the feeding of the multitudes. We saw the walking on the water. Both the same day, by the way. And it's in that time period that this statement is made. In Matthew 14, it's been a long day. Been a rough day. And Jesus is looking for some quietness. Look at verse 23. Matthew 14, 23. When he had sent the multitudes away, he went up on a mountain apart to pray. Multitudes being around Jesus was not something that was hard to find. Jesus is lonely. It wasn't because he was socially incompetent. Jesus attracted crowds everywhere he went. There was countless times, like the event we just read, the problem wasn't getting people. The problem was getting a fresh breath there without people. He wanted to be alone with his Father. He had to send people away to make that possible. Jesus says loneliness, and our loneliness, if we're going to claim Christ-likeness, well, let's make sure there's some similarity. Don't think of it as shameful. Don't think of it as sadness. He was not some social nincompoop that just didn't fit in social settings. Some people just they're just kind of socially backward. And a lot of people are lonely because they just don't want to be around people. That's not Jesus. He loved being around people. He was looking for people that were sheep without a shepherd. He wanted to help. And he was around people a lot. He just got through sending in Matthew 14, verse 23. He just sent 5,000 men away with all the women and children that we don't know how many were. It wasn't about lack of people. But there were times he was lonely. And so let's talk about and look about some of the things that could have led to that. The loneliness of Christ was because he would not compromise. The times he didn't fit in, it wasn't social incompetence. It's because he would not go and do and engage in things that the multitudes might want him to do. He refused to compromise. He didn't engage in certain traditions, even though those traditions of the elders would have been based on what they would call religious principles. They may have been based on the law, but they were not part of the law. And when they got elevated, he rejected them and he rebuked anybody who did. And that led to some isolation. That led to him not being a part, maybe, of the crowd. He wouldn't engage in certain things. He wouldn't engage in certain traditions. We talked this morning about his, when he was a child, how submissive he was to his parents. Talking to the young in here. How many things do you think Jesus walked away from when he was a teenager? How many times do you think he didn't fit in? It wasn't because he was socially incompetent. It wasn't because he wasn't a friendly person. It's because he would not compromise his principles. So talking to the young in here and talking to those of us who used to be young, how many times did we do that very thing? We did fit in. We did go with the crowd. Jesus wouldn't do that. He refused to compromise his mission. He refused to compromise his character. There are places he wouldn't go. There are things he wouldn't say. There are people he wouldn't be with. And that might have led to some lonely times. But does that lead to you feeling sorry for him? Might have been some times he stood out in a crowd. Might have been some times he missed out on some things while young. Maybe. You feel sorry for him? He didn't compromise what he was supposed to do. When you don't compromise, there might be some places you don't get to go. There might be some fancy dinners you don't get to attend. Might be a lot of things that happen because of that. There's no shame in it. So this, when we're talking about the loneliness of Christ, it's not a sad thing. Look in John chapter 10. There may have been some lonely times, but it was because of his teaching. Because it was so misunderstood by so many. To them, he would have been like a massive inconsistency. The last shall be first and the first shall be last. Come again. You want to be rich? Give what you have away. In my weakness, I am strong. There's a lot of things Jesus taught that unless you had ears to hear and eyes to see, they didn't make just a whole lot of sense. Sounded like the words of a madman, right? That's exactly what people thought. John chapter 10. Look in verse 19. John 10 verse 19. There was division among the Jews because of the sayings that Jesus was making. It was his teaching that got their attention. It wasn't his looks. Isaiah in prophecy talked about, there was nothing fancy about Jesus' looks that made him stand out. His teaching, however, he stood out real quick. And in verse 19, those teachings has caused a division. And in verse 20, many of them said, he has a demon and is mad. Why would you listen to him? His teaching so contradictory to how they thought and how they thought things ought to be. It was his teaching that separated him. They thought he had lost his mind. They all felt qualified to point out some discrepancies that they saw in his teaching. Look at Mark chapter 3. Mark chapter 3. Real similar statements. But it's a little bit more personal. When we were studying John chapter 10, you could pick up from the context, that would have been those Jewish hierarchy that we studied a couple quarters ago. The Jewish leadership and all the trouble they had with what Jesus did and taught. Mark chapter 3, the conclusion is going to be the same, but it's a different group of people. Mark chapter 3, start with me in verse 20. The multitude came together so that they could not so much as eat bread. Remember, it's not drawing a crowd that Jesus' problem. If he's lonely, it's not because nobody wants to come around. And when his friends heard of it, they went out to lay hold on him, for they said, he's beside himself. And the scribes that came down from Jerusalem said, he has Beelzebub. He's beside himself. And that was coming from words that would have been friendly to him. You've got the leadership saying he's mad. You've got the scribes, the educated. They're saying, well, he's doing some pretty powerful things. We can't deny that. But it's the spirit of demons. It's not the spirit of God. It's Beelzebub. They couldn't deny what he did, so they denied the source. And then you've got friends that didn't go that far, but they're seeing you as he's beside himself. He might not be thinking so clearly when he taught these things. Well, yeah, there might have been some lonely times. There might have been some times he felt like there was nobody there. It was not something to be sad about. It's because of choices. But here's the reality of it. Those above two things we've talked about, they could have been changed in the blink of an eye. He could have compromised and the crowds wouldn't have left him. He could have compromised and the scribes and the Pharisees would have been right there saying amen to everything he taught if he had just taught it their way. He could have compromised and he could have been everybody's buddy. It was a choice he made not to. He could have watered down his teaching like too many in the religious world do. God help us never do that. He could have watered down his teaching and he wouldn't have offended a soul. Because here's the truth of the matter. Stop talking about divorce. Stop talking about adultery. Stop talking about fornication. Let's stop talking about the plan of salvation. Let's stop talking about modesty. Let's stop talking about anything except how much God loves the world and how much grace and mercy he's got. And we won't make anybody upset. You'll have a lot of disagreements. And if we'll just water down our teaching, he wouldn't do that. That was a choice he made. Wouldn't compromise his work, and he wouldn't compromise his teaching. And that may have led to some isolated moments. There's no doubt of that. But the point is, if we're going to count our loneliness as Christ-like, well, then our reasons need to be like his. Sometimes we'll do anything under the sun to not be lonely. If that means fitting in, we'll fit in. If it means changing what we teach and practice, then we will. Because we don't want to be lonely. Jesus didn't do that. So when you read about him, unlike foxes and birds and animals, they had homes and he didn't. Don't feel sorry for him. Those are just the consequences of the choices that he made. And when you look about the reality of it, it's almost funny, isn't it? He had no home. This was a Bible class. Here's an easy question for you. You remember what Jesus was trained to do? You remember what he did before he started his public ministry, as we call it? He was a carpenter. If a carpenter don't have a home, there's a choice being made. Here's an even stronger one. If a miracle worker ever finds himself alone, there was a choice that was made. Because they brought people to him by the multitudes. We read this morning in our Bible class that because of the word spreading about his ability to work miracles and heal the sick and the blind and the lepers and so on, there was a time he went to Capernaum and people had lined the streets with sick people just hoping to get close enough to touch his garments. They were just hoping to touch the clothes when he walked by him. If a miracle worker is alone, there's a choice being made. So don't feel sorry for him.
He refused to compromise, and he just accepted whatever the consequences of that was. He refused to water his teaching down, and whatever that led to him as a social outcast or ostracism, well, that was, he was willing to take that. So when we're talking about the loneliness of Jesus, let's make sure we understand what exactly caused it. What exactly it was that led to that. And let's start making some applications for ourselves.
His loneliness was a choice. So instead of pitying him, let's adore him for his unwavering conviction. Let's support his cause and let's follow his example. Look in 1 Timothy chapter 1. I'm sorry, 2 Timothy, excuse me. 2 Timothy chapter 1. Let's follow his example. Don't compromise. Don't pull back. Don't water down what the scriptures teach and what you were convicted about. It might lead to some ostracism. It might lead to a different dynamic when you go to your next family reunion. But that will be Christ-like. Just feeling lonely. There's nothing unique about that. But if our loneliness is because of conviction and because of stand of faith, and because we refuse to back down, now we can claim some Christ-likeness. His loneliness was a choice. So let's follow that example, even if it leads to maybe some of our own loneliness. Paul's willing to do that. 2 Timothy 1, look at verse 15. Paul writing to Timothy near the end of his life, you know the time period. This you know, that all those who are in Asia have turned away from me. And he calls a couple of them by name. But that's interesting. Those in Asia. Do you remember the missionary journeys? Paul spent a lot of time in Asia. That Asia there, by the way, we would think of it as Asia Minor. He spent a lot of time in Asia. There were a lot of churches that he planted in Asia. And there were a lot of churches that he watered in Asia. There are Christians all over that part of the world who he loved, who he sacrificed for. There's a time when they backed out on him. Turn to chapter 4. Chapter 4. Demas has forsaken me, having loved the present world. We're not going to take the time to do this. You can do this when you get home. But you can go back and Demas appears in other places besides this closing letter that Paul writes. And in those other places, we find him being active. He's traveling with Paul. Paul called him a fellow laborer. Paul went to battle with Demas. They went into wars together. They would have probably tasted some persecution together. Demas pulled back from him. Paul doesn't have him with him anymore. He forsook him. Look in verse 16. At my first defense, no man took my part. No man stood with me. They all forsook me. That first offense, by the way, to put it in the timeline. Do you remember Acts 28? Paul's in what we would refer to as the house arrest period. Well, he's in house arrest waiting for his docket, waiting for his case to make its way to Caesar. That's what he's talking about. When that finally happened and he finally did go before Caesar, he said, when I first went before him, there was nobody. I was alone. Nobody stood with me. Everybody forsook me. And by the way, the newer translations use the word deserted. Now, we understand forsake. We know what that means. But we don't really talk like that. But we use deserted. We know exactly what that means. We know the ramifications of that. So that's a powerful word. Demas has deserted me. All of Asia deserted me. When I went before Caesar, deserted, I'm alone. Oh, bless Paul's heart. Paul just probably wasn't a very friendly guy. He just never had any friends. He's a little boy with a ball in the corner of the playground. No. Paul didn't compromise. Paul didn't water down. And if that led to some isolation, he's okay with that. When we talk about the loneliness of Christ, we talk about a character that elevates above all the things down here that makes us want to hold on tight to something. He didn't sell out. And Paul copied that. Paul imitated that. Here's an example of Christ-likeness. Some don't handle loneliness very well. Turn back to John 16. I know people, and I guess you know people. Loneliness is the last thing in the world we want to be. We'll drive 200 miles if that's what it takes to not be lonely today. I'm not going to spend 2 hours alone. I'll drive an hour and a half to keep from it. Maybe we know people like that. How did Jesus handle it? How did Jesus handle being alone? In John 16, Abby, in working through this lesson, you think about John 13, 14, 15, and 16, the upper room conversations. We could spend months breaking it all down. But typically, what we think of is, we think about all the stuff that he said about the Comforter coming. We think about the stuff that he's doing to prepare them for what they don't know is going to be the Great Commission. But in the middle of all of that is a verse that probably gets overlooked. I know it has been by me. But in John chapter 16, look in verse 31 with me. Actually, let's back up a little bit. Jesus has been teaching and teaching and teaching and teaching. I don't know how long this dialogue happened in the upper room after Judas left. But in verse 29, excuse me. His disciples said to them, "Lo, now you're speaking to us plainly and no more proverbs." Jesus had said some things they didn't get. You can guarantee that stuff about the Comforter, that's a little bit over their head in the moment. They figure it out later. But he now has said, now something they get. And they said, "Oh, finally you're talking plain. Now we understand what you're saying. Now you're speaking plainly. Now you're not speaking darkly with proverbs. Now we are sure that you know all things." And in verse 31, I imagine with a tilt of the head, Jesus said, "Now you believe?" I don't know how that would have come out with the tone. But in the world, did I hear you right? After 3 years, after all you've done, after all you've seen, after all you've heard, after all we've talked about even tonight, now you believe? Verse 32, "Behold, the hour is coming and it is come, and you're going to be scattered, everyone to his own, and you will leave me alone." And you know what that's talking about. That's talking about just a few hours away. When the trial is on and the lies are being told and the slapping's happening and the spitting's happening and Peter's not to be seen. And John has scattered to this direction and Thaddeus has gone to the other direction. The time's coming. As a matter of fact, the time's here, he says. "You're fixing to leave me alone. I'm going to be alone here in a minute. And yet I am not alone because the Father's with me." And all the things we study and emphasize about the upper room discourse, there's probably a major part that I know I had never thought of as I should have. Jesus, knowing full well what's about to happen, know what's going to happen when he walks out those doors. And he says, "Yeah, I'm going to be alone, but not really." How did Jesus deal with his loneliness? What caused his loneliness? A refusal to back down, a refusal to water down. And he could handle it so easily, so readily, is because he knew he really wasn't alone. Even to say that he was lonely, I guess when we get to this part of our understanding, that's really not even a part. We're not even saying that, should we? I don't guess Jesus ever was lonely. He never considered himself alone. "I'm not going to be alone. My Father is with me." Turn back to 2 Timothy chapter 4. I hope we can make an application about that for ourselves. Because it's possible to feel that. It's possible to understand that. 2 Timothy chapter 4. I want to reread what we had read earlier. And then we'll keep going. Just as a reminder. He's already said in chapter 1, Asia deserted me. He had already said earlier in this very paragraph, Demas has deserted me. Verse 16, "At my first offense, no man stood with me. All men forsook me, deserted me. I pray God will not be laid to their charge. However, notwithstanding, The Lord stood with me and strengthened me. Could you imagine? After this, if we had seen, Paul went on that extra missionary journey we don't have record of. He was found innocent at that first offense. You remember the history, right? And he went back preaching again. Could you imagine me and you meeting him some point later on? How did you do that? How could you have gone to Caesar alone? How did you stand beside? How did you go with? I imagine he would have looked and said, alone? What are you talking about? I wasn't alone. The Lord was with me. The Lord stood with me. The Lord strengthened me. I wasn't lonely. I wasn't by myself. Paul's Christ-like in his loneliness, if we want to use that phrase. Paul's Christ-like in his standing alone, both in the reason that led to it and the way to withstand it, the way to endure it. And there's where you and I hopefully that's some applications that we can make for ourselves. So I saw a statement. I want to read this. I want to make sure I get this right, because I thought it was really kind of one of those profound things. A man is not tested by what he can do with others, but what he can do alone. Think about that. And for those who are still raising children, that's going to be a part of your work one of these days. You're going to have to leave them alone. I know right now some of the younger ones, it seems like all you do all day long is snap and unsnap a car seat and pack a diaper bag. The day's coming, I know you don't believe it yet, the day's coming when you'll actually get to go to Walmart and buy some groceries and you won't have to take them with you. You will be able to leave them alone. As a matter of fact, you'll need to. They're going to have to learn to function without you. That'll be different ages for different kids, depending on maturity levels and whatever. But that day's coming. That's a part of parenting, is teaching them to stand alone and to work on their own. A man's not tested by what he can do with others, but what he can do alone. Can you think about how often that plays out in the Scriptures? I'll tell you how this lesson came about. It's getting ready for our Jeremiah class. I'm excited about that. We're starting this Wednesday night. If you haven't been coming to the Bible classes and you're not confined to bed, why don't you? It's kind of a contradiction to say, I love studying the Bible, and then by choice, not come when you know that's what we're going to be doing. We're starting a brand new study this Wednesday night on Jeremiah. I'm excited about it. I've never taught it in the way that we're going to be doing as far as in a quarter system like this. I'm excited. And getting ready for that and just looking through his life and trying to get it in chronology of how the book was written. And Jeremiah was alone a lot. We'll find this out later on as we begin the study. He was told by God when he first started his mission, don't take a wife. He's going to go through a lot, and he didn't even have a home to go to at night to have somebody to comfort him, to go through it with him. He did it, and he did it alone. Or did he? I got a feeling Jeremiah knew what Paul meant. He wasn't alone. He had some discouraging times he had to deal with, but he knew who he worked for, and he knew where his strength was coming from. And the prophets of Old Testament, a lot of them stood alone. Elijah stood alone for decades against Ahab and Jezebel because there were people faithful, but he didn't know about them. They weren't in his neck of the woods. Elijah stood alone. Noah stood alone. And we're not going to take the time to start making a list. There are people who stood alone. And though they could do it the same reason Paul could, they could do it because they knew they weren't alone. If that's how we handle our lonely days, if our lonely days are because we won't back down, if our lonely days are because we will not retreat, we won't compromise, we won't change the message in order to fit in, and then we handle that through the strength God gives us, we can sing about being Christ-like. We can talk about being Christ-like. Let's just make sure ours is matching His, both in cause and then how we deal with it. Look at John chapter 1. John chapter 1. We're going to read. I don't want to be hard when I say there's, and I don't want anybody to take this lesson as we make applications of it. So he's saying loneliness must be a pretty fun thing. No, it's not. That's not the application I want us to make. Loneliness is bitter. And we're going to see it in Jesus' personal life. Remember earlier we talked about leadership. He's isolated from them. We talked about friends, scribes. It goes deeper than that with Jesus. Look at John chapter 1, verse 11. He came to his own, and his own received him not. How many times can we make application of that? He came to his own. Well, we could say, well that's talking about the nation of Israel. It is. That's talking about the time maybe he went back to Nazareth and his hometown rejected him. Yeah. Turn to chapter 7. It's more personal than that. Chapter 7. Verse 5. It's a parenthesis that John gives us. John 7, verse 5. His own brothers did not believe in him. Yeah, there were some scribes that didn't want to have anything to do with him. There were his own, if you want to use that as the nation of Israel, they rejected him. His hometown rejected him. His own family rejected him. They didn't believe who he was claiming and what he was teaching. Thanks be to God, some of that changed. We know he had a brother who became an elder in the church of Jerusalem. He had a brother who wrote what we call the Book of Jude. His brother, that elder, wrote what we call Book of James. They didn't stay without it. But there was a time his own family would have been a part of that crowd thinking he might have lost his mind. He might be a little bit beside himself. It's bitter to be alone. That's not what we're seeing. He was rejected by his own, and that own even included his family. What did he do? He went on to greater loneliness. He was rejected by those he taught. He was rejected by the very ones he healed. What did he do? He just went on. He was, the friends ridiculed him, losing his mind. Leaders plotting in dark corners, and he keeps on going. The closest ones to him dispersed to the crowds. He told them, "You're going to leave me alone." And he kept on. Ultimately, when betrayed and denied and fled from, he goes on to even greater loneliness at the cross. Nobody was there with him when he did that. There was nobody holding his hand when he did that. But he really wasn't alone with him. Father, they're with him the whole time. He knows how we feel. Look at Hebrews 4. Hebrews 4. Jesus knows what it's like. You ever felt ostracized because of your faith? Have your convictions ever made you stand out like a sore thumb at work, at school, on the bus? Jesus knows how we feel in a lot of different realms. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15, as a sign of encouragement. We do not have a high priest which is not touched with the feelings of our infirmities. He was in all points tempted like we are, yet without sin. And usually we talk about the temptations that he would have known what it was like to feel lust of the flesh, pride of life, lust of the eyes, and so on. But he understood, as Son of Man, the emotions that we go through. He would have understood what it was like to have somebody walk away that was a so-called friend. You've tasted of that. Jesus knows how you feel. Jesus knows, it might be some in here this room, who that family dynamic I just talked about. You can't even have a family reunion. Because there's so many who are unfaithful, they've been marked, and you can't be with them. Jesus knows how you feel. There were times his family wouldn't have anything to do with him. On the opposite extreme, right? Jesus knows how you feel. Our invitation is, do we know how he felt? We've all felt loneliness, but that wasn't the loneliness of Christ. We've all felt like we've been deserted. Do we feel it the way he felt it? Was it for the same cause? Did we handle it the same way? Those times he was alone was because of his character. Wouldn't compromise. It was because of his teaching. He wouldn't change it for the crowd. And whatever consequences came from that, He said, I'll stand alone because my Father is with me. He knows how we felt. Do we know how that feels? Have we ever took that type of stand? Get your songbooks out. Lessons are not lessons unless there's an application. Please don't misunderstand the application. I am not saying, oh, I sure am glad you're alone. I hope you go. I hope you don't talk to a soul the rest of the day. That's not the application. The application is, do not compromise. Do not water down the gospel of Christ. And if that leads to some lonely times, well, you're not alone. You're Christ-like. And that's following the example of the apostles, and that's following the example of the faithful prophets. And the same promise that God will be with us, and that what made us to them. Same promise has been made to us. Take comfort in that and encourage from that. You're not a Christian. By faith, you know who Jesus is. As a matter of fact, you don't just know it, you believe it. But you haven't done what he asked you to do. Confess him, repent, be baptized today. Wash your sins away. Become his child. Don't let his sacrifice be for nothing. For the rest of us who are Christians, maybe we have compromised too much. Maybe we have watered down too often. We're going to be stronger going forward. We're going to be better going forward. Repentance is a nice thing. Forgiveness is a nice thing. And he's promised that if we'll do one, he'll do the other. Let's take advantage of it when we stand and sing.